Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Today's show is a deep dive really into all things Colin Sexton, as well as a look at what the Cavs are going to be seeing on Tuesday night in Philadelphia against the 76ers. Colin Sexton is coming off a 31-point game against the Knicks, a career high for him, and he was fantastic. He's been one of the best parts of this young Cavs season so far. If you aren't familiar, this is your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. I'm Chris Manning, site manager at Fear the Sword, writer at places like Forbes and Cleveland Magazine. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Again, Colin Sexton, 31 points in that Cavs win over the Knicks. Really, to me, one of the best games he's ever played in the NBA level. And I think it's one of those games, too, that really shows you how far Colin Sexton has come. And this 108-87 win for the Cavs, a win that, to put some context on it, seemed to put the Knicks further down their spiral of insanity and incompetence and whatever other words you want to use, Colin Sexton was just outright phenomenal. We're going to play a quick clip here from one Jordan Clarkson, courtesy of Fox Sports Ohio, and you're going to get an idea of sort of what Colin Sexton has changed for him from rookie year to now.
You were here last year with Colin. He has 31 career high for tonight. What's the difference in his game this season?
He made a lot of easy plays tonight. You didn't see him really forcing it. He got into the paint. The biggest play for me, I think, seeing him was him coming down in transition and slowing down and then kicking it back to Jake for a three. That showed a lot of growth in his game. Other times he would go in there, kind of dive in there and try to challenge a big or something like that. But, you know, it's just showing his growth, how he's slowing down, and it's just helping his game.
Colin Sexton, I think, has really improved in ways that are very interesting considering what he was as a rookie. If you want to start off with what he was this time last year, he just started getting some more regular minutes, was either about to start or hadn't started yet with the George Hill trade, hadn't come yet. I think he started right around this time against the Thunder on a Wednesday. It was his first career start. And what we thought of Colin Sexton then, I think, is very different than what we thought of Colin Sexton now. Last year at this time, this was a point guard, a young player who didn't look like he had a reliable jump shot, was famously dribbling in from corner threes to take mid-range twos. The strength for him was a real concern. You know, just the overall kind of view of his game was kind of tough. It didn't look like he was going to ever be efficient, or didn't look like he was going to be someone with, you know, to be a reliable jump shooter, sort of these really key skills for modern NBA guards. You look at what Colin Sexton did against the Knicks, who, again, aren't very good. It's not like he was going against DeJounte Murray or, you know, Josh Richardson, who's going to see on Tuesday, some elite defender. But Sexton goes in there, he drops 31 points, again, new career high, and I thought he was as efficient as he's ever been. In this game in particular, he did so much of his work at the rim and on threes. He was willing to take and shoot threes right when he got passes. He's willing to take that three where he's a couple of feet behind the line and just shoot away. That really saw him kind of push away from the mid-range. He didn't force those mid-range jumpers that he loves so much. In a game or two before that, he's done that. You kind of see what he can kind of lean into that part of his game, which isn't all bad. We'll get into that. But Colin in this one was just as analytically friendly as you want to put it. And his speed really did him a favor here too. He was just blitzing up and down in the corner in this one, using that dribble, using that high end speed. I think it's like him and De'Aaron Fox are maybe the two fastest guards in the league. I would have to kind of think, and Ross obviously is up there, but he's got this twitchy explosiveness that he can just use to blitz up the court, barrel past defenders, create opportunities for him and for other teammates. That's just a really impressive thing. And most everything I would say that you like, I would say I like about Colin Sexton's game was on display in this one. Perhaps my favorite thing for this was his number of free throw attempts. Now, Colin Sexton, as we'll get into later, kind of talking about where he's at right now, is not someone that is particularly great at getting to the foul line. He's an okay free throw shooter, around 80% for his career, but he does not do a great job of getting to the free throw line. According to Cleaning the Glass, we're just going to get into this now, he's in like near the bottom of free throw shooting in terms of how much he's getting. he just doesn't get to the line enough to really maximize what he's sort of doing. In this one, he gets to the line 8 times, makes 6 of them. That's free points. That is, you know, that's going to make him more efficient. That's going to make him more reliable. And as I think he will be eventually, like an 80 to 80, somewhere in the 80 to 85 range as a free throw shooter, that's just going to be, you know, very friendly points for him and something I think he can get a lot. He's got the speed, his frame with the muscle he's added, with the strength he's added to that frame. I think it's something that is only going to make him stronger, make him a little more dependable and a little more sturdy, especially with how hard and how fast he played. That's really, really just good to see. And if he can build on getting that many free throws or getting more than 0 or getting 2 in a game, that's a really positive thing. Sexton's whole year, in my mind, has been really strong. Through 9 games, he's averaging 18.8 points. He's shooting 44.3% from the field, 42.2% on threes, and 2.1 assists per game. To me, the most impressive leap is that 3-point shooting. This is a guy that last year did start chucking them as the season went on, but he only took 3.6 per game. This year, he's up to 5 per game. The off-ball numbers are good. Basically, every part of his 3-point shot is a pretty useful skill for him at this point that defenses have to respect. To me, again, this is just such an impressive leap considering he didn't really like taking those shots in last year. It didn't look like he was going to be there as well. His turnover percentage is down as well, going down from 12.3 down to 8.3 this year. That shows you that even if he's not getting as many assists as I think you might like him to sort of get as one of the lead creators in an offense, he's not turning the ball over as much. That shows you that the game is slowing down for him a little bit, at least so far. Defensively, I also think there are things that are really fun. His on-off numbers don't indicate that he's helping the Cavs a ton. They're 3.6 better per 100 possessions with him off the floor. But he's more engaged, he makes smarter decisions, and he's taking better paths and fighting through screens and moving around. He's not just getting up into a guy and focusing all his attention on that one spot. He's become more cognizant of everything that's going on around him and allows him to make more plays. He will start blowing up plays now where he knows what's coming, he reads it correctly, and he takes a gamble that maybe sometimes that is going to cost him, but he's blowing things up and he's taking the ball down the other way. You look at this, what he did against the Knicks. There's a play where they tried to run a dribble handoff with, I think he was guarding RJ Barrett, which is no small task, and he just blows it up because Taj Gibson was a little loose with the ball, and Sexton read it correctly, knew it was coming, and just took it both down the other end. Easy points for the Cavs. I'll be curious to see what different metrics think of him as the season goes on. Defensive real plus minus, for example, is one where he was among the worst guards in the league last year. That stat is not up yet. There's just not the big enough sample size, as far as I understand it. If you want to look at win shares, which I don't love setting win shares, he was at negative 0.5 last year, which is very bad. He's actually a 0.1 positive this year. So there is, I think, some real improvement on that end of the floor, which, considering how bad he was last year, is arguably more impressive than his offense, the offensive leap, because we did already see that sort of manifest last year, and this is like a whole other part of his game that, at least in some way, he's better and more playable at. If there's two things I would say you want to see Colin build upon after these first 9 games, I think number one, it's getting more assists. His assist percentage is at 11.1%. That's down from last year. It's literally the bottom percentile in the league. Darius Garland is doing a lot of the creation right now for this Cavs team. Jetty Osmond, Kevin Love are doing a lot of that as well. Tristan Thompson, weirdly, is doing some of that. But a leap for Sexton, I think, is going to see him being a little more successful as a passer. I don't think he needs to become a pure distributor. It's not really his game, but I do think him kind of figuring out how to pick and choose a little bit more, something Jordan Clarkson, you know, hinted at, that he's finding guys. And I think there's at least 2 to 3 assists in that Knicks game he doesn't get because guys just miss shots. I think if he can kind of ratchet that up a little bit, that's going to make him a little harder to defend. It's going to make the Cavs just kind of flow a little bit better and just kind of keep that ecosystem really healthy. And then the other thing is just it's shooting at the rim and drawing fouls. I think I lump these two things together. I think the jump shot is clearly there. Again, he's great in transition. He's just so freaking fast that it's really hard for anyone to kind of slow him down once he's motoring in that way. But for him to be the best offensive version of himself, and I think that's the best version of Sexton, is the most offensively realized version of that player. I think he needs to just become, it's going to be getting more efficient in two ways. Number one, he's going to have to shoot above 58% at the rim. He's going to have to shoot a little better in terms of drawing fouls. He's 29% of his shots are at the rim. He's 50% is below average. It's just he doesn't really finish through contact very well. He doesn't handle being contested very well. I think he's looking for fouls, but he's just really just kind of going at it. He doesn't turn to the floater like Darius Garland, and Garland maybe turns that floater too much, but at least he kind of goes to it and plays to his strengths a little bit. Sexton, I think, could really pull off a floater. He has a really nice ability to stop and get a pull-up jump shot off from the elbow. I wonder if he could do the same with the floater. I can live with those mid-range shots. He has the ability to get it off. I don't want as many of them as you're seeing, but I do think that's a tool he can use. It'll matter if he ends up being a valuable player when the Cavs are making the playoffs again, and he's going to be a guy that's going to help them win type playoff series. That mid-range jump shot is going to be valuable. So for me, I'm looking at kind of doing what he did on Monday, getting to the rim more, maybe mixing in some mid-range shots. But I also think you want to see him. I also think you want to see Colin Sexton get to the line a little more, finish a little better with the rim, just kind of work on that part of his game, because it's going to make him just hit another level offensively. That we're already seeing a very useful offensive player. His next level, I think those are the clear ways he can improve. All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you haven't already, please check out Locked On Browns. Jeff Lloyd doing a great job covering that Browns team, the always interesting Cleveland Browns, over on Locked On Browns. Get that wherever you're getting Locked On Cavs. And today's show is also brought to you by Audible. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial today. You can choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA or text locked on equal sign NNBA to 500-500. That is locked on NBA or text locked on equal sign NNBA to 500-500. Audible's great. You can use the convenient Audible app to listen anytime, anywhere, on any device. That's on your phone, Alexa, Bluetooth, wherever. You can listen at the gym, while shopping, in the car, while traveling. Anytime you can't read, you can listen to an audiobook with Audible. And Audible members are getting more than ever before. Every month, you can choose one audiobook, regardless of price, as well as two Audible originals from a fresh selection. Members stay motivated and inspired with unlimited access to exclusive guided fitness and meditation programs. And you can sign up for a free update from publications like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post delivered directly to the app. You can easily exchange any title you don't love at any time. You keep your library forever, even if you cancel. And again, try that 30-day trial and choose one audiobook plus two Audible originals absolutely free by using the code LOCKEDONNBA or texting LOCKEDON equal sign NNBA to 500-500. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Okay, getting into tonight's game, Cavs 76ers. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. For the Cavs, the injuries are the same as according to the most recent report. That means Ante Zizic out, Dylan Windler out, John Henson out. Those are all the same injuries as far as I know. We'll see if you know there's anything said at the shoot-around on Tuesday in Philadelphia, if there is any update that we're not quite aware of yet. But as of right now, we're not seeing any changes in those guys. Henson and really all of them should be back soon-ish, I would kind of say, based on their initial timelines. Windler's kind of the one that I'm most curious about just because, you know, first-round draft pick, clearly I think should play. Clearly a guy John Beilein quite likes, so I'll be kind of curious to see, you know, what kind of stuff that means. From the Cavs are 11-point underdogs in this one, according to Odd Shark, so definitely a sizable underdog. And that's despite Ben Simmons being questionable with a shoulder injury. Al Horford is sitting out due to rest for the 76ers, and they will have some other people like Shaq Middleton not available, as well as Zaire Smith is on G League assignment with the Delaware 87ers, so they're the Blue Coats, I think they are now. So you don't have the full Sixers roster. This isn't the full Philadelphia squad that many people, including myself, think is a very real finals contender, if not one of the 3 to 4 teams most likely to win it. But this is still a very good team. They have Joel Embiid, who's their big guy, their big best player, and someone that is going to really kind of dominate this game in some way. We'll learn more on Tuesday after you're listening to this, I'm sure. If Ben Simmons in particular is going to play, that's the one that's really only subject to change for the Cavs. As far as I know, as far as it has been indicated, you're not going to see someone like Windler or someone else come back. If they wanted to make their debut, have these guys come back at home, Sunday, weirdly enough, against Philadelphia would be an option. Thursday against Miami would be another one as well. Stats-wise, the 76ers come into this game as the 16th rated offensive league in terms of offensive rating, but they're 7th in defense. If Ben Simmons plays, I think one of the things to watch is just the Cavs are going to have something really weird to contend with. Philadelphia runs out this massive lineup when they're fully healthy. So that's Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, Joel Embiid. That is massive. The Cavs on the other end of that spectrum are pretty small. Tristan Thompson as a starting center is like 6'9". That's not big. Kevin Love, not all that big in terms of NBA size. You have two guards that are like 6'1". You have Jetty Osman, who's, you know, tall, but he's pretty lean, doesn't have a lot of bulk. He's about, I think, maybe the same height as Ben Simmons, but Ben Simmons looks like he's just frankly is a lot more muscular than Jetty Osman. That size differential, those size issues, I think are going to manifest themselves in a real way in that one, and we'll kind of see sort of what that kind of means for the Cavs. Even if this isn't the full Sixers experience, and you know Ben Simmons doesn't play, you still have Embiid, you still have Tobias Harris, who Kevin Love's probably gonna have to chase around a bit and be as mobile as we've seen him on that defensive end this year, and see kind of what that looks like for him. You're gonna have Sexton, you know, who just defended RJ Barrett, probably defending Josh Richardson. That's probably just gonna be an ongoing thing where he's gonna have to defend the bigger guard, as opposed to having Garland doing it right now. I think one of the keys here, and it's probably the biggest key, is just how the Cavs approach defending Joel Embiid. Embiid is, again, very clearly a force. He's dominant. He's much bigger than anyone the Cavs have and anyone that they can really throw at him. It's very clear that Tristan Thompson is going to get that assignment. Tristan, again, has been great this year. Maybe the best basketball he's ever played, which is just nothing short of remarkable and a great, great story. He's gonna struggle in this one. Embiid 7'1", much bigger. Tristan's gonna be the Cavs' best shot, though, because Larry Nance has spoken kind of openly about, and at least in the preseason, about defending those big guys is really hard for him. It's not something Kevin has really ever been good at or is really equipped to do. Thompson has to be that guy. This is actually a game where you'd really like to have John Henson. Would frankly probably be the best choice on Embiid just because of his he's a little longer, has the shot blocking ability a little better than Thompson, at least in that regard, and would just sort of be your theoretical nominal options. Zizic would at least have the frame to beat on there, even if he's not quite the level of defender you would want on someone like Joel Embiid. So Thompson's going to get it, but you know, do they leave him one-on-one? Do they double? You know, does the whoever the closest guard is, you know, slide in? Let's say it's Garland and he roams off his guy a little bit, and he tries to do some just a quick double team based on whoever, you know, is going around him there. If you look at the starting lineups that they've run without Ben Simmons, it's Raul Neto's coming in, so that's clearly not the same threat. Al Horford being out also means, you know, does that mean Mike Scott's smart? You can freelance a little further off Mike Scott if it's not instead of Al Horford. You know, does that mean you see more Kyle Quinn, Jonah Bolden, James Ennis? Like, there's guys you can risk leaving open more and do aggressive doubling. I think JB Bickerstaff has done a really good job kind of coaching the Cavs defense up this year. They're much more disciplined. They're much more kind of put together. Right now, according to NBA.com's defensive rating, they're 17th in the league. They're 106.9. Just behind the Atlanta Hawks and the Bulls, and a little ahead of teams like Dallas, Portland, and San Antonio. So again, this isn't an elite defense. They, you know, they're well off league leaders like the Jazz and the Lakers, but this is a far cry from the disaster that they were last year, and I think a lot of that does have to go to JB Bickerstaff kind of being the template center, and then Antonio Lang contributing as well, and just this group playing harder, more organized in defense than we saw under Longobardi, Ty Lue, and Larry Drew last year. So I just want to see how they approach Tristan Thompson defending Embiid, and if Thompson gets in foul trouble, what do they do? I think Nance has to do it then, but we'll see kind of what their counters might be. For the offensive side of the ball, which is sort of always going to be the more interesting side for this Cavs group as they're currently kind of constructed, it'll be really interesting to see how Philly and how Brett Brown approaches defending the Cavs. You know, you could have Ben Simmons being healthy and kind of changing this, then he could defend Jetty and kind of really do a lot to make Jetty's life a bit difficult. He's, you know, as long as he's defending off ball, Jetty, some of the stuff Jetty's been doing well, maybe doesn't pop off if someone like Ben Simmons is going to kind of clamp down on him a little bit. But if he doesn't play, there's still really kind of unique stuff. I think the big one would be Josh Richardson, who's an elite wing defender, who is as good as their kind of is at defending point guards. He's just, you know, he's very locked in. He's very versatile. He can defend all these different positions. And Josh Richardson is one of those guys that just you can throw out there and he's just going to do a really good job. If you look at what he was with Miami the last couple of years as kind of a template for this. Last year, 17th in defensive RPM, according to ESPN. That's a bit of a drop-off, but you could sort of contribute that a little bit to him probably having to do too much on the offensive. And if you go the year before, Josh Richardson was a little bit better, had like a roughly the same ranking, but about 0.3 better according to that metric. That's not an unsizable difference. So he's not the elite of the elite in terms of being a wing defender, but he's really good. He's going to clamp down a guy, and he's going to make Colin Sexton's life, I would guess, much harder than it was against the Knicks. To me, the obvious kind of choice here for Philly is to put Richardson on Sexton, and then you have Embiid probably defending Love, I would guess, unless they want to have him, you know, be dropped back all the way. You could have him on Thompson and have him just kind of camp in the paint. That's possibly an option as well. It's frankly probably more kind of keeps Joel a little more stationary in that one. That will be interesting as well, and just kind of seeing how what different looks the Cavs throw at them, and just kind of seeing what the Cavs do to kind of keep things going. If there's a test case for just what a John Beilein coach team, what that Beilein ball can do against a really good defense, this is one of the first ones we're going to see. The Cavs don't have a ton of, I don't think they have played like a really, Boston has been really good in defense so far, and that's kind of the one, but this is just another one of those games, probably the second one of the season, where we're really going to kind of see what the Cavs can muster up against a good defensive team, a very, very good defensive team that's well-coached, well-organized, and has the personnel to kind of make their lives hard. Even if it's not peak 76ers, Embiid and Richardson are sort of perfect anecdotes for what has worked for the Cavs this year in terms of Tristan Thompson, in terms of Colin Sexton, and kind of how they navigate that's going to be really interesting. Again, that's a 7 p.m. tip-off. Cavs are 11-point underdogs. Have a recap up after that game. Coverage if you're the store, so check all of that out. All right, that's going to be for today's show. Again, Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening today with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook or two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. And again, that's it for today's show. Again, I'll be back tomorrow recapping Cavs 76ers. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. Follow me on Twitter at CWMRights for live tweets and coverage of the game. And Locked On Cavs for all things Locked On Cavs. Check out Fear of the Sword as well. Talk to you again tomorrow. Enjoy tonight's game.